Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Darren Lewis of the Daily Mirror and Dominic Fifield of The Guardian. You don't have to be Einstein to work out the problem. No blend, no balance, no speed, no spirit, no harmony. No excuses for Man United and Jose Mourinho, Darren?
None really. I have to say I was really surprised at how bad Manchester United were yesterday. It was a performance that screamed that there were deeper issues than the scoreline. Their first touch of the ball was from the kickoff after Pedro had scored. His first shot on target all season. There were certain members of the Chelsea team that had the performances of their lives yesterday. Now, I think Chelsea's a separate issue because we know that the Chelsea players can turn it on when they feel like, and there are a number of players that have an axe to grind with Jose Mourinho. But I think as far as Manchester United are concerned, he is nowhere near getting anything like the full value for the players. Paul Pogba, zero goals, zero assists, zero chances created, one touch in the opposition box for £100 million. That's just incredible. You look all around the team. Zlatan looked his age yesterday. On Sunday. I think as far as Manchester United are concerned, the individual performances and the team performance, the defensive display, Daily Blind was an absolute nightmare. Gary Neville in TV commentary described that defence as garbage. There are huge problems there for Jose Mourinho to solve.
There's a bit of a pattern here. 13 losses in his last 27 league games for Jose Mourinho. You know him well, Dom. What was his mood and has his personality changed over the last year or so?
Definitely. He seems utterly joyless now. I mean, when he first came to England back in 2004, he had a bit of a sparkle to him, a bit of mischief. A lot of the comments he made were tongue-in-cheek, and he had that element, that humour about him, and that's been drummed out of him recently. I do think when he came back second time in 2013, there was a brief period where he described himself as a happy one, and that soon got exposed as a myth, even really at the tail end of the championship season in 2015, when it all became a bit dour. And then the shock of those 5 months, he's still scarred by it. In the same way that Chelsea's players are still scarred by it, because they're still trying to redeem their reputations, I think he's carried that into his next job at Manchester United. And there was he had no reason to be happy post-match on Sunday. That was a nightmarish return. I mean, it was the polar opposite of when he came back with Inter Milan back in 2010, when his team was disciplined, they'd won the game well. He'd sort of retained that sense of awe with the Chelsea players as well, with greeting them in the tunnel before the game. They clearly were, awestruck by him still. This time, the utter indifference of the supporters, of the Chelsea players. None of the players who started that game really acknowledged him pre-match. Substitutes.
That would have hurt him, wouldn't it, Darren? Because, he had to me the air of a magician, an end of the pier magician. We all know that there's an ace up his sleeve or a seven of hearts up his sleeve. And that was the Conte row. What did you make of that?
I thought that was one of his classic misdirection techniques to detract from the performances of his players and his ability to get more out of them. Mm-hmm. We've all covered games where Mourinho has been very mischievous and come up with what we describe as a line for us that's going to make our back pages. And it's great copy to write about a row between two managers or two big individuals. But essentially what that did do is mask the problems with the team. I'm still a big Mourinho fan. I've got to put my cards on the table. I'm quite fascinated by this schadenfreude around him in so much as we do like to take a big guy down in this country. I think as far as Mourinho is concerned, I don't think you could achieve what he has done without being a very talented man. It's quite interesting you mentioned the end of the pier magician type thing, because that's quite a good analogy. He will be very, very keen to prove that the game hasn't passed him by, that the Contes and the Klopps and the Pochettino of this world aren't about to go past him. So I think this season could be quite fascinating in that we will see what he's made of. I don't think this result necessarily defines him. I think it will be fascinating now to chart where he goes from here.
In that context then, Dom, is it vital that they're not embarrassed again against Manchester City in midweek? And, you know, they've got Burnley on Saturday, not very good away from home, it has to be said, but that's a gritty team that if there's any lack of commitment in United, they'll expose it.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it is. But again, I'm with Darren. I think we should be holding fire before judging Jose at United. I mean, a few days previously, they'd actually ground out one of the best defensive performances we've seen in recent years. And then their game plan was absolutely blown out of the water after 30 seconds on Sunday. Brilliantly on Twitter. Have you seen they've done a countdown of the 30 seconds? I mean, it sums it up. I mean, it was comical. But, you know, this is going to take time. It's not going to take one transfer window for him to get that team as he wants it to be. It's going to take a couple. And I think an element of patience is required.
But he said he was happy with the four players who came in.
Yeah, yeah.
So why is Mkhitaryan, you know, on the outer reaches of Mars?
That is one of the great mysteries. I mean, when Mkhitaryan signed, I did wonder whether he was a Jose Mourinho type player in the old school way. You know, does he provide the same industry as invention? I mean, I'm not sure he does, but clearly that isn't working out at the moment. Maybe it will in time, but yeah, that is intriguing. But look, he may have been happy with those four players, but he's going to need more, isn't he? He's going to need to strengthen that defence. He's going to need more players coming in there.
Is he making the best of what he's got? If you look at it, he's isolating Schneiderlin. He seems reluctant about Shaw. And why on earth Michael Carrick isn't playing is beyond me.
I think they're all good points that I wouldn't disagree with at all. And I shared Dom's view on Mkhitaryan, for example. When he bought him, he thought he's a great guy in the 10, scores goals, has done for his former club. He would be the natural replacement for Rooney in that position, because lots of people felt Rooney should be playing behind Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But Mkhitaryan in there would be a fantastic replacement. Why is Antonio Valencia still playing at right back when you've spent so much money in the transfer window? Why have you not brought in
He was arguably United's best player.
That's the irony. And I think as far as United are concerned, there are some very good players still at that club that you could argue, it's right, that he's not getting the best out of. Rashford playing on the right side of the attack, you know, when he's a penalty box player. I mean,
he ended up almost as a wing-back, didn't he?
This is the point. I mean, you look at that team and there are so many players in there doing a job instead of excelling in positions where they are strongest. And I think as far as Manchester United are concerned, I've said it already, I'll say it again, I'm a Mourinho fan, but sometimes you have to stop being a pragmatist and start actually releasing the potential of the players that you've got at your disposal. I think some of those individuals will go to other clubs and excel, and that will be a crying shame.
You mentioned Pogba earlier on, Darren. What struck me about him was almost the listlessness of it. It's almost as if, I don't fancy this.
Yeah, and that's quite worrying. I mean, Juventus, who got the huge amount of world record fame, they're doing okay. They lost at the weekend, but essentially they're still top of the league and they're still going great guns. I think it's 7 wins from their last 8. But you look at Pogba as an individual, and United must be wondering what on earth they do with him, because if anyone was going to get the best out of this guy, it was the guy who's plundered leagues and Champions Leagues in a couple of different countries across Europe. So is it to do with the commitment of the player? Is he playing to instruction? Is he a leader? Is he motivated? Or is it that he just is struggling to cope with the pace of the English game at the moment? There have been a number of players, Mike, who've come to this country, first season have been horrendous, second season onwards have been great. Son Heung-min at Spurs is an example. Laurent Koscielny at Arsenal is a brilliant example. Came from Laurent, very ordinary first season. After that, he was sensational. I think as far as Pogba's concerned, it might just be that he's struggling to come to terms with the English game and there is better to come from him.
Let's look at Chelsea then, Dom. It's a club you know well. That was, it seemed to me, almost to be a watermark occasion, that. 3-4-3 worked very well. Conte's had some initial problems. Is he over those problems?
I think it's probably too early to say he's completely over them. I think the last month has been quite revelatory. Really, since half-time at Arsenal, when they were 3-0 down, he switched to the three-man defence at the Emirates then, and they haven't conceded a goal since. But we've been saying watershed moments in every match since. Hull City away, I mean, everybody's going to beat Hull by the look of things at the moment, unfortunately. Leicester City at home, we thought that was great. They've beaten the champions, dismissed the champions. But the reality was, Leicester aren't great travellers. Manchester United, that did send a statement out. But it was a game with a particular emotional attachment for a lot of those players, so they were going to be motivated for that one. So let's see what they do next. I still think that when teams have the pace and the movement up top, they will still struggle, Chelsea, as Liverpool and Arsenal proved against them. And I still think there's an element of experimentation with the three-man defence. It has been refreshingly solid. And the most encouraging thing about Conte's tenure so far has been he's getting more out of players than maybe his predecessors were. I'm talking certainly Victor Moses. Victor Moses has been absolute revelation at right wing back. This is a player that, you know, Mourinho didn't give the time of day to, and spent the last three seasons out on loan, and he suddenly looks like a natural in that role, which is remarkable. But okay, let's see how he is against a Manchester City or an Arsenal when they come around again. But those are the signs. Those are the encouraging signs. I mean, Azpilicueta as a centre half has been superb. Dare I say, even David Luiz looks like a defender sometimes. but you know, that's encouraging. But I think it's telling that the fact they still want to strengthen significantly in January. So that tells me that Conte doesn't think he's got the finished article yet.
I actually agree with Dom in so much as...
Sounds like a surprise.
But, you know, I think Chelsea's proximity to the top flatters them. I think they've had two very
obliging... Isn't that the nature of the season, though? It's a pretty transitional season, isn't it? Five clubs within a point.
Yeah, I think it is a transitional season, and it's quite striking when you consider the amounts of money that was spent in what was a record transfer window, that there are still so many sides, as you say, separated by so little. But I think, I just think as far as Chelsea are concerned, it'd be very, very fortunate to have three very obliging teams to play against. Hull are awful. There's no way to kind of sugarcoat that. Leicester cannot win away from home. At home, they're quite decent, but they appear to be a side more motivated for the Champions League than the Premier League. And Manchester United, well, mistake in the first minute. The referee should have sent off David Luiz and didn't. Gary Cahill actually had Daley Blind been a bit braver, Gary Cahill's shot would have hit him where the sun doesn't tend to shine. United, in some respects, were the architects of their own misfortune against a side packed with players desperate to put one over the guy they couldn't stand. It will be when they play teams that are more organised, more motivated, with more cutting edge, defensively stronger, then we'll be able to judge just how good Chelsea are.
So in that context, OK, they've got a League Cup tie at West Ham, but next weekend they're at Southampton. Now, there's a team, high-pressing, really well-organised defensively. I think they've only Tottenham and Leicester have won more points in this calendar year. That's going to be a real test for them, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And Southampton's performance at Chelsea last season under Mourinho, was one of the most startling performances at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea disintegrated that day. Southampton ran rings around them, and then they could have scored five or six. And that is what Chelsea will be up against at the weekend. A team with that much confidence and fluid movement up top. Claude Puel's initially, you know, it took him a while, those first four games, only 2 points, but he really has them playing. That was a wonderful point for them at Manchester City, and they deserved it. They fully merited it. And they will test Chelsea at the weekend in a way that Manchester United didn't, and Leicester didn't. Certainly Hull didn't. Let's judge Conte then. Let's see where they are then. And I think Conte will be aware of that. I mean, he knows. He still refers back to those Liverpool and Arsenal performances, and he knows that pace hurts Chelsea still. But we haven't seen that back three tested in the same way. Mm-hmm. So let's see how they do Sunday.
I've always been impressed by Virgil van Dijk. You know, he could have played in with a pipe and slippers at Celtic. He's come down there. He looks actually the sort of defender that Chelsea could do with.
Absolutely. He's authoritative. He's strong in the air. He's good on the deck. I saw him stepping into midfield a couple of times yesterday against Manchester City with a real grace and almost an imperiousness. It's interesting, Celtic, they have decent players. Wanyama played for Celtic, came down here, really slotted into English football really well. Van Dijk is a no-nonsense defender. For all the things I've just said about him, he makes good decisions, and I think he's a big part of why Southampton have conceded only 2 goals in over 700 minutes. They've got a really, really good record. I don't think their point against City was a fluke. I think they'll be strong as Chelsea, and they'll give them real problems. Part of the reason why, Dom was saying about Chelsea, Pedro's goal was his first shot on target all year, which is just ridiculous for an attacker that they paid £22 million for. I think as far as Southampton are concerned, Van Dijk is a fantastic leader. He improves the performances of the players around him, and he gives the confidence to their offensive players to go forward and do their stuff, because they know they've got someone like him behind them. Everyone keeps raiding the Southampton cupboard. I think if they were to come back, he might well be one of those that they want to pinch.
And the academy still is working. Sam McQueen's come in and done really well. Mm-hmm. And another Chelsea reject doing excellently is Rameur. Now, you obviously saw a lot of him. Yeah. He's reinvented himself, isn't he?
He has, really. I did an interview with Rameur when he was like the future of Chelsea way back, and he'd come from Barcelona. I mean, I think it was AVB that signed him, and he was going to be the ball-playing central midfielder that Chelsea desperately were crying out for at the time. And they had a few bright moments in that first where he got badly injured, and that really cost him his place, and he never really got a look in after that. Last season, he seemed to be more of a ball winner than anything else, but he's playing now. He's getting the ball down, and he's that sort of, I don't know, quarterback-style defensive midfielder that we knew he could be when he was at Barcelona, and that Barcelona thought he might be. And Barcelona had inserted a clause into the deal to take him to Chelsea, saying we'd like a buyback on this fellow, and that shows you the potential and the ability he had. Mm. It's good to see him coming through and dominating, because Southampton's scouting is so shrewd. When they signed him, you sort of thought, ooh, what have they seen that we haven't then at Chelsea? But they had seen something, and he's been excellent for them this season. Mm-hmm.
Liverpool's recruitment has improved. They're one of the top five at the moment. You know, I think they were top of the league for about an hour on Saturday night. Your view on how they're evolving? You know, there's a lot of talk at the moment about the Fantastic Four, their front four. They've got everything, haven't they?
They do. They look a fantastic side. Tony Pulis said that they were one of the best sides he's played against because of the fluidity of their movement, because they are so potent. It seems an age away now since we were saying that if they didn't have Daniel Sturridge, they were toothless. Now, without Daniel Sturridge, they're probably more... they definitely are more potent. And I think as far as Klopp is concerned, he deserves credit for the fact that he has transformed a side so solely reliant on one player into a side with so much power, pace, fluidity and cutting edge. Where I think they could struggle, and at the weekend, and all of our colleagues wrote about it in the Monday papers, is defensively. Because he kind of bristled in the Monday briefing.
He said he didn't respect anyone who thought they were poor at set pieces.
But the facts are that they've conceded 11 goals so far this season, more than any other team in the top six. And I think as far as Klopp is concerned, if there's something that's going to undermine their title challenge, and it is a title challenge, you know, they're in the thick of it, they're scoring as many goals as everyone else, and they're rolling with the top teams at the moment, it's going to be defensively.
If you look at them going forward, you know, I'll put my hand up. I wasn't sure about Firmino. Now, 12 goals, 5 assists in this calendar year. That shows that I was wrong, and a lot of other people were wrong about it.
Yeah, when they signed him from Hoffenheim, wasn't it? I think Brendan Rodgers he always brought him in as a sort of I don't know, fop to the board. He wanted to sign Christian Benteke, and the board wanted to sign Firmino. So he sort of said, OK, fine, we'll get him, but only if I can get him. Now, not long afterwards, Brendan Rodgers is out on his tod, and Firmino is a player that Jurgen Klopp has always admired and loved at Hoffenheim. Surprise, surprise. And he's brought the best out of him. He is... OK, we go on about false number nines, etc., but he does everything. He creates amazing... He had an amazing assist rate at Hoffenheim, amazing statistics from the Bundesliga, but he's added goals to his game now, and that he sort of fits into the style of what Liverpool are trying to achieve up top. I mean that's a nightmare to mark. I mean, you don't know who you go with. No. Coutinho, we're not mentioning him. Coutinho is absolutely
well, and Lallana, you know, has excelled, hasn't he?
The amount of running that he does in a game is quite astonishing. And I don't know where you start when you try and counter them all. I mean, You can't pin it on one man anymore. As you said, Daniel Sturridge used to be the focus. Post Suarez, it was all about Sturridge. But actually now they hurt you from all areas. When they came down to Chelsea earlier in the season, I thought their best player on the pitch that day was actually James Milner. He was absolutely exceptional at left back. I mean, the amount of energy he's got is ridiculous. I mean, all that cross country running as a kid is just still there. They hurt you from all over the place. And you know, actually, come to think of it, we can talk about their defensive frailties, but they'll outscore most teams in that division.
Well, that's the big point, that they are so potent up front and they are so interchangeable up front that they almost remind me of the Brendan Rodgers side that challenged for a title came so close. They had such a fantastic scoring rate that they weren't that concerned about whether they let a couple in at the back, because if they score 4 and you score 3, happy days. I think as far as Klopp is concerned, he won't mind that. They remind me already of the Dortmund side he's left behind. And I kind of hated that whole rock and roll type thing.
Heavy metal football.
Heavy metal thing. I mean, you know, it was the thing that we kind of latched onto. But it is. It is just, you just can't cope with it. It's just a wall of noise at Anfield, and the players are basically coming at you from everywhere, and they can leave you kind of dizzy. And that's what Pulis talked about. We were at Chelsea when they destroyed Chelsea. And again, your point about the fact that when Chelsea come up against a side with pace and movement and cutting edge, they got no answer. They destroyed Arsenal, who've undefeated since then, Arsenal, and sweeping teams aside. OK, they drew against Middlesbrough, but generally they've been very potent this season. Liverpool are serious title contenders.
Mm. They're at Crystal Palace in the BT Sport live game.
And after Saturday. I said all that, they're going to lose now.
Again, a club that's dear to your heart, Dom. You had a long sit-down with Alan Pardew last week. Only 5 wins in 31 Premier League games. What's his mood like?
Pretty bullish. It was ahead of Leicester anyway. Look, that statistic is damning, 5-31. But I think, given that he decided last summer to completely change the way Palace approached matches and the style of play on the pitch, I think we should probably accept that last season has gone and the actual statistic is 3 wins in 9, which is more acceptable. They are a team in transition, and even he admitted in that interview that it's a risk changing the way the team approaches matches mid-season, or you know, his priority has got to be survival. He's got to stay in the Premier League, but I think he's ideally like to target the top 10. But whether Palace can achieve that, I'm not so sure. I think they're going to be at moments this season, as Leicester proved at the weekend, as West Ham did the previous week, when things look a bit awkward at Palace. If you take out one or two of their key players, they're not quite the unit, the slick unit that he wants them to be, without Punchin, who does a hell of a lot of work in that midfield, and without Scott Dan at the back, and they will need Dan against Liverpool. They'll need somebody who can organise and has got a bit of pace about him and can read the game well against that front four. But if you take them out, they're not quite what they need to be. I think give it a couple more transfer windows, Palace could be quite something in relatively. But at the moment, they're a work in progress.
Okay. Liverpool's other game this week, Darren, is a League Cup tie against Spurs. Still unbeaten Spurs. Looks like that League Cup tie, I think both sides will be looking for fringe players, probably to feature in it. Where are Spurs at the moment? I know you've been pretty bullish about them.
I still think they're in good shape. I think their league position, I mean, there's only a point or covers, we were saying, the top four or five. But the fact that they're undefeated, the stats say that a high percentage of the teams, of the last team to remain unbeaten in any given season, generally goes on to win the league. I still think defensively they're in great shape. Only four goals conceded, by far the best defensive record this season. I think up front, they're a little bit blunt in the last couple of games. Son Heung-min not quite had the same impact that he initially had. But I still would fancy Spurs going forward because I still think that they're based on a very solid back line. They've got a good platform to build on. I think when Kane comes back and they expect him back within the next couple of weeks, they'll be in good shape again. I would like to see Son playing on his own up front more often. I think he gives Janssen a chance, possibly too often. Janssen maybe a season or so away. But I still do think Spurs are in good shape. I think that the League Cup tie, neither side, I don't think the League Cup is high in the priorities of either side, frankly.
So in league action, they've got Leicester on Saturday. Leicester really poor away from home. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I saw them at Chelsea and they just disintegrated early. They have no answer to an early concession. It may be that Okazaki coming back in does actually help them because he does drop into that midfield and make it a five, which makes it more awkward to play against them. But they've got Copenhagen coming up after this, and a game which they win, then they're into the knockout. That's a pretty good time for Tottenham to be playing them, to be honest, because I do think that that Leicester may wrap a few up in cotton wool again, like they did at Chelsea. I think Leicester will be fine. Leicester will finish top half the table, and I think that's still a really good season for them, despite what they did last year. And they will get it together away from home. They've had some pretty darn difficult games away from home, and Spurs away is another one. So I don't have any real concerns about them, but I do think at the moment they're a bit stretched. And for all that Claudio Ranieri says that they're not distracted by Europe, I think they probably are in the back of their minds.
What do you make of the Vardy situation?
What, in terms of him not playing more? I think Ranieri is trying to rekindle the fire that he had last season. I mean, he obviously Footballer of the Year. He's had massive highs. He's done his book. He's had all of the positivity that's come with that. But I just think he hasn't quite caught fire in the same way that he did last season. And Ranieri is trying to get that out of him. He's obviously brought in Musa. Musa's scoring possibly might put a bit of pressure on Vardy, because I think if Musa can retain his place in the side, then it gives Ranieri a reason to say, look, you get better buck your ideas up, otherwise you won't be getting back in. My worry for Leicester overall, you know, Mike, is that I just wonder if they feel last season was their mountain that they climbed, and that now it's the Champions League, because they just don't seem to have that same hunger and desire for the Premier League that they had last year.
They've still got the quality to finish top 10.
Should they be satisfied with that? The good teams, they put the victory behind them and they go on to the next challenge. That's a sign of great teams, and they build on it. And I think I think there are too many people around Leicester who basically say, who cares what happens now? We've done it.
Well, Claudio Ranieri's saying that.
Yeah, but Clearly, I mean, he was spent half of last season saying we're fighting against relegation.
Well, they were.
Successfully.
Believe any of us.
Successfully. Well, absolutely.
But, you know, all managers are alchemists, aren't they? Now, if you look at Man City, you've got Pep Guardiola almost downplaying the significance of Sergio Aguero. You know, some talk about Real Madrid. Surely they're not thinking of getting rid of him, are they?
I don't think so. All the noises are that he's agreed a new extension on his deal at Manchester City.
So what's this then? Just tough love?
I think there's an element of that. I think Pep Guardiola seems to have picked out certain people that he wants to almost bring down a peg or two at Manchester City. Mm. I was baffled, as everybody was, by the decision not to play Aguero at Camp Nou. I mean, that seems to be cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, it was bizarre. But there was a logic to it, I suppose, if you want to flood midfield against them. And it didn't work. It was a disaster. But, you know, Aguero's scoring rate domestically and in the Champions League, actually, apart from that match, has been phenomenal. There's no way that Guardiola would even countenance his departure now, to be honest. I think it's a game of politics. And I think he's just asserting control over a dressing room that, let's face it, they've underachieved the last couple of years, really. Mm. So this is him saying, OK, well, let's make this my own and see where it goes. Like Aguero will score 30 goals this season. I'm sure he'll score 30 goals for Manchester City. I mean, if he stays fit.
And they've not won for five games, but the last time that happened under Pep Guardiola, Barcelona won the lot in March 2009.
Yeah, but I think Barcelona are a far more capable side than this City side, I think. And obviously Barcelona had that little guy who just scores for fun for them. I think City have got real problems. I agree with the Aguero situation. I think that's just absolutely incalculable that you would go into a match against Barcelona without your biggest weapon. It's just incredible.
So you think they've got real problems? They're top of the league.
Yeah, but sometimes we can get... Listen, we can get carried away with the league position. Chelsea are a good case in point, but I think defensively, they have a mistake in them.
Yes.
John Stones has made more mistakes leading to goals than any other player in the Premier League. I think as far as City are concerned, teams have realised, as Southampton did, when you pressure Manchester City, you get more purchase at them. Look, when Pep managed Bayern Munich last season, teams gave them so much space, they barely went into their half because they just knew how strong Bayern Munich were. He's not getting that luxury in the Premier League at the moment because teams are pressing far higher up the pitch, and good, well-organised teams like Southampton, like Everton, are managing to get joy out of it. And I think he's having to rethink his strategy. And it's not all of the top teams that are dismantling them. People say, oh, there's no shame in losing. Celtic scored three goals against Manchester City. So he does have some thinking to do. We all know how good they are going forward. It's at the back that they're dropping, that they're being undermined, and that's the reason why I think that they've got a couple of problems.
Mm. OK, final question for both of you. Which manager has got most to be optimistic about at the moment in the Premier League? Go on, Darren.
Jurgen Klopp. I think that with that forward line, he can go toe-to-toe with any team. He's beaten some of the best teams already in the Premier League, and I think that Liverpool have got a real title challenge on their hands again.
Dom?
Wow. Most optimistic, sorry. Well, Klopp's a good shout in terms of what Liverpool's ambition is. I'll go for something slightly off-field, though. I think the way that Burnley performed against Everton at the weekend shows that they've got enough to stay out of that bottom three. And for me, for Sean Dyche, that would be a hell of an achievement.
I'm going with Darren. Football's pretty short of fairy tales, but Jurgen Klopp winning the league with Liverpool is one for the ages. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.